My guest at this time is South Carolina Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy. He represents the Palmetto State's 4th Congressional District. He is also a former attorney and prosecutor, which gives him a great background to join us to offer his thoughts on today's hearings before the Supreme Court regarding the constitutionality of the individual mandate within the president's health care laws that were passed and signed into law just over 2 years ago. And, sir, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, this obviously happened prior to you coming to Congress, but I'm sure it's one of the reasons why you decided to run in the first place. What was the big thing you were looking for in today's oral arguments, and what kind of answers did you get to those questions?
Well, it's not about policy. To me, that's something that Congress can debate, or we can debate around our kitchen tables. This is about it's about power. What are the limits, if any, to federal power? And if you look at the history of the Commerce Clause, without digressing into a law review analysis of it, in the past, the Supreme Court has said the Commerce Clause enables you to regulate a single grower of wheat for personal consumption. Same with marijuana. In the Reich case, a single marijuana grower in their own backyard in California, if the Commerce Clause is powerful enough to regulate an individual growing a crop in your backyard, and it's powerful enough that Congress can make you purchase a private instrument, then there are no limits to what government can make you do. So the policy of the Affordable Care Act, and whether it's good, sound public policy or not, to me is a separate issue. Constitutional conservatives have to be willing to say, even in the case of a good idea, that is not the proper expression of congressional or federal power, and it's beyond the reaches of the Commerce Clause. So what I'm going to be looking for, and I'm going tomorrow, but I'll listen to the audio tape tonight, whether or not there's an acknowledgement that there are limits to what the federal government can do.
One of the arguments made by the Solicitor General today, sir, was that whether or not people want to purchase health insurance or not, ultimately, most people get health care services at some point during a given year, and certainly over the course of their lives. So they are a part of the marketplace, whether they want to specifically engage in a health insurance contract or not. How do you react to that everybody's essentially part of this marketplace, whether they voluntarily go there or not?
The exact same analysis can be made for dental insurance. And you can add to that good oral health is tantamount to good overall health. So next, will Congress be taking up that everyone has to have dental insurance? And after that, will it be that everyone has to have insurance for contacts, glasses, or to go see an optometrist? And after that, will it be life insurance? Because generational debt is a bad thing. I can't think of anything worse than passing on debt to children, laying aside the fact that Congress is passing on $16 trillion in debt. From an individual standpoint, life insurance is a great idea, so you can exhaust your debts at the time of your death. So the fact that something's a good idea, the fact that it impacts me when you don't eat right. If you're obese and a smoker, it impacts the premium that I pay even if you do have health insurance. Since that's true, can Congress force everyone to either take Chantix, Zyban, or purchase Nicorette gum? And if not, why not?
What is the argument from the conservative perspective about where this was a decade and a half ago? This essentially the argument from Newt Gingrich back then, a lot of Republicans in opposition to the President Clinton's health care policy, was that the individual mandate was a much more responsible way to go.
I think everyone having health insurance is a splendid idea. I said so from the House floor last night. I actually think if you can afford health insurance and you don't buy it, you're crazy. I also think that indigent folks, because I do believe in a safety net, I would rather purchase for them private health insurance than have this entity we call CMS with Medicare and Medicaid. So I understand the flirtation from a couple of decades ago with the individual mandate. At first blush, you think, yes, that would solve our problems. But I can also make you do other things that would solve my problem. I can make you carry comprehensive collision insurance instead of liability for your automobile, because that doesn't leave people who are hurt by a drunk driver totally uncompensated. There are lots of things we can do that are good public policy, but government doesn't have the power to do it. And we're not going to make it as a republic if personal responsibility and accountability to others decrease, and government dependency and government telling us what we have to do. If government is the only reason that you're practicing good citizenship, then what in the world are we doing in this social contract with one another anyway.
Congressman, let's look a little bit ahead. There's a lot of people speculating today about what the line of questioning from some of the justices might mean for the ultimate decision, which is expected in June. But let's go even just a little bit past that. If, in fact, the court upholds the individual mandate, what will that mean for the law and for health care in this country?
Well, my guess is, as the Supreme Court likes to do, it won't be a cut-and-dried opinion that is easily applied. Those non-justices have a way of confusing even simple ideas or concepts, and this is not simple. I think the political reality is, if they say the individual mandate is constitutional, lay aside the constitutional analysis, if they say that it is constitutional in their judgment under the Commerce Clause, then the debate shifts from the power of government back to the policy. And there will be a referendum this November on whether or not we want Congress doing it. Now, my argument is that Congress can't do it. If I'm wrong, then the debate this November will be on whether or not Congress should do it, and that's a policy debate. By the same token, if people are surprised and it's a 5-4 decision that this is beyond the scope of the Commerce Clause, then my side of the aisle has to come up with replacement pieces that do deal with these two legitimate issues, which are access and cost. It's not enough for us to just, you know, if some miracle were to happen and it would be a 5-4 decision that the Commerce Clause is not this elastic, it's not enough for us to say we won. You also have issues of access and cost, which have to be dealt with.
If the mandate is declared unconstitutional, I believe it was the judge down in Florida in the earlier case who said that it would basically invalidate the entire law because without the revenues generated by the individual mandate, the whole thing crumbles down. Do you suspect that that would be the way that the Congress would address it as well?
I think he's right from a statutory construction standpoint that the individual mandate is not severable from the rest of the law practically. But one could also argue, because the CBO estimates are now coming out, that the cost is really double what we thought it would be, that even with the individual mandate, we can't afford this particular piece of legislation. So if the individual mandate is gone for Commerce Clause reasons and the act as a whole collapses, both sides will be right back, hopefully working out something. I prefer market-based solutions. I honestly would rather buy you a private health insurance policy, and I'm not sure it would be cheaper for me to do that for the indigent. Now, what are you going to do with folks who do have the financial wherewithal and still continue to rely on their fellow citizens to subsidize their decisions? That's when citizenship and personal responsibility come into it. I don't know that the government is capable of making people be responsible. You can have policies that encourage it or discourage it, but I cannot, as a congressman, make you do the right thing and be responsible to your fellow citizens.
Last question before we let you go. You mentioned that depending on the outcome, there could be a referendum on this politically come November. Regardless of the outcome, how big of an issue is this still for the folks you talk to in your district?
I think it's big. I do come from a conservative district, and one thing that I enjoy doing, and I have plenty of friends who voted for the president, and I have some who are planning on doing it again. What I enjoy doing most is talking to supporters of the president who don't support this law. And there are several entrepreneurs. There's one in particular I'm thinking about who has a temporary staffing agency, whether it was an intended consequence or an unintended consequence, and I tend to believe it was an unintended consequence, that line of work goes away. You, from an administrative and a cost standpoint, you cannot insure people who work for you for 2 and 4 weeks. It will prompt exactly the kind of discussion that we ought to be having in this country about the size and scope of government and how to meet challenges and problems. It infuriates me when I hear people say that if you oppose this law, you want to see people die on the hospital steps. My father was a pediatrician in Spartanburg the entire time I grew up. I'm not aware of a single solitary soul who did not receive treatment from my father and his practice, regardless of their ability to pay. So we're going to have a conversation about how to take care of the indigent, but do it in a way that incentivizes the market and does not increase our dependency on government, or else there's no such thing as federalism, and there's no limit on what I can do. And I'll come back to it again. I think you'll agree with me. Dental health is good. Eye health is good. Life insurance is good. Exercise is good. If all we care about is the policy, underneath the legislation, then you'll support me in my efforts to require all four of those. My suspicion is that you wouldn't support me in my efforts for any of the four. And the reason you would cite is, well, that's not the role of government. And that's the reason I'm citing here.
Very interesting to watch how the third and final day of arguments go tomorrow, sir. Enjoy your time seeing it live, and thank you very much for your time with us today.
Thank you for letting me come on.
South Carolina Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy represents South Carolina's 4th Congressional District. He's a former attorney and prosecutor. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.